find, we have a list of events on It's Going Down, as well as SuwariMe.org around the country that are happening. Just show up at one of those events. We're going to have marches. We're going to have protests, pickets in front of businesses that use prison slave labor. That's another thing that people can do, is be really intentional about where they're spending their money. Our dollar is our vote in this system. And when we choose to buy clothes or fast food or get our insurance or our gas from places that participate in prison slave labor, then we are fueling that system and allowing it to persist. But when we choose to just make that alternative choice, then we can really suffocate that system. And prisoners are doing that. They have to do that when they boycott. All the money that they spend goes towards the prison. So they're not allowed to get any of those privileges. But we can just make the simple choice of just making that alternative. They have no alternative. So if they can do it, we can definitely support them by doing the same out here.
Heather Ann Thompson, in the last minute we have, can you talk about the repression and retaliation prisoners face if they were to participate in this strike?
Well, it can be severe, and I think we should really heed Imani's point that support on the outside is critical. Eyes on what's happening on the inside is critical. One of the things that Attica shows us is not just that it's important to support folks when they're protesting on the inside in the moment when they're protesting, but to keep eyes on this throughout. It's really,
and how do people keep eyes on?
It's highly likely that there will be folks that will experience some serious retaliation from prison management, and we've got to watch what's going on, demand entry, provide lawyers, and make sure that folks on the inside are protected.
Well, I want to thank you all very much for being with us. Heather Ann Thompson is the Pulitzer Prize-winning historian. Her book is about Attica, the book called Blood in the Water, The Attica Prison Uprising of 1971 and Its Legacy. Imani Sawari speaking to us from Seattle, Washington, prison strike spokesperson. And Cole Dorsey was on the inside, now on the outside, one of the prison strike organizers. He's speaking to us from Oakland, California. And, of course, we'll continue to cover this strike that's expected to go on until September 9th. That does it for our show. We have a job opening for a broadcast engineer full-time. Find out more at democracynow.org and apply. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wells, Laura Gottesdiener. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm sitting here. I have on a yellow hat, a pink shirt, dark sunglasses, and an earring in my ear. And I'm going to tell you not to get into heavy drugs.
This is George Carlin.
Well, it sounds bizarre, I know, but there are other things to do with your life, other things to help you make it. Heavy drugs make it all worse, and they help you die.
In the beloved fairy tale, Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Yeah, it's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you tonight, joined tonight by Hal. And we have a very special program for you tonight.
Hello.
I mean, that's what you told the lady at the coffee shop. You said your name was Hal.
Yeah, so it's like the computer.
I just assumed that I had it wrong all this time, and I'm, you know, I'm not admitting any error. I'm not, you know, admitting any guilt or anything like that. Mm. But if it's Hal, then Hal it is, you know, not a problem.
It works. It works.
Does it work? Okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I miss Kyle, though, I gotta say. I miss him. But
he's all right. He's you know, there's all kinds of personas, Hal was just emerging.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of that's what happens. Sometimes you find out things; they're a part of the world that you just didn't understand. They were there. They were there all along. It's,
yeah.
it's like the deep state. They're here. They're proud, and there's something to be reckoned with.
Well. This is a day. This is quite a day. Wow. I don't know how many times I'm going to say wow in this hour, but wow. I mean, just wow.
I think the music's appropriate.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
It's so appropriate. Let's have it drown us out a little bit. Because you can't be heard over this.
No.
And why should you be?
This is the drumming of a special counsel, of indictments.
It's everything coming together at once.
That's right.
There's nothing you can do about it. You can't
crescendo.
Stop it. Oh, I guess you can stop it if you wish hard enough.
After crescendo.
Can I just say one thing, Kyle?
Mm-hmm.
Guilty.
Very.
Guilty.
Mm.
Guilty, guilty. Guilty. Guilty, guilty. And that's just...
Is it eight?
That's just Michael Cohen. That's just Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
Because that's not all.
Oh?
That's not all.
Yeah, I get him confused. What else? Do tell.
Well, it's... Paul Manafort, his former campaign manager.
That's the ostrich coat guy, right?
He also had a bad day.
Oh, did he?
Guilty, 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 guilty. Guilty, 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 guilty. That's 16 guilties in one day. And more could be coming, too, because they couldn't decide on, I think, 10 of them. Okay, so Paul Manafort was found guilty.
Uh-huh.
And Michael Cohen declared himself guilty to avoid a trial and excessive prison time. So you have...
Which completely bypasses his ability to inquire and look at the... That's basically like, yep, you've got the case. Mm-hmm. You're agreeing. You're siding with the prosecution. That's huge.
You caught me. What took you so long?
Exactly.
That's basically what he said.
No dispute.
No,
go on.
And no appeal. He's guilty. He is guilty as sin. But what's particularly interesting, first of all, I heard on the radio over here, Paul Manafort could very well spend the rest of his life in prison for the things he did. And Michael Cohen, on the other hand, is avoiding a lengthy prison term. He will go to prison. He will go to the president's lawyer. Will go to prison. But what's particularly amazing about this, and what is going to make me say wow a whole bunch more times today, is the fact that he implicated Trump in his statement. I'll find the exact quote, but he basically. The theme's trying to play again. Why is the theme trying to play a second time? Somebody has a CD player in some kind of mode.
Because...
Yeah, it's in repeat mode.
Everything is on repeat mode.
I don't know how to get it out of there.
That's the world we live in.
Alexa, stop!
Allegra.
Okay, good. When did we get that in here? That's kind of cool.
I like that.
Yeah, we got a big one. We got one of the jumbo Alexas.
Alexa, increase power to 200%.
Okay, she doesn't listen to you.
Oh.
She doesn't listen. That was the first thing. The first command we gave to Alexa. Do not listen to Hal. Ask Alexa. Go ahead. Ask Alexa if she knows Hal. And you'll get an interesting answer. You will.
It's true.
Yeah, your name comes with baggage, Hal. So I just want you to know that.
That's okay. I'm well aware.
So let me see if I can find what was actually said by Michael Cohen. The problem is I'm looking at Google News, and Google News wants me to pay for every single story I click on.
They used to be very good. Can you still look at their cached stuff? I actually did that recently. looking for different articles, and I was able to read a cached article on like a forum post regarding something I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, but that's a lot of work, you know? You have to...
It's the little tiny caret next to the link. It shows you the link, and then it shows you the address and so on. But then there's like a little caret, and you can actually grab the cached version. I thought it was all but, you know, disappeared. But you can still find cached stories. It's just a little extra.
Yeah, it takes, you know, you have to do more and more investigative reporting yourself just to find the stories.
Hey, that is part of being an intelligent consumer of news and information. And it's why it's so important to be informed and to have that critical thinking.
Yes. Okay. I'm narrowing in on the story. I'm keep hitting paywalls. Boy, the internet is really it's no fun anymore.
Well, and let's just reiterate, this is an emerging story. They've been talking about it all day in a lot of ways, but there's developments.
Okay. I got the quote here. Okay. In acknowledging the charges against him, Cohen said he was directed to violate campaign law at the direction of a candidate for federal office. And at the same candidate's direction, he said he paid $130,000 to somebody to keep them quiet, which was later repaid by the candidate. Now, he did not identify the candidate. Why didn't he identify the candidate? Let's ask ourselves that question. Why would you not say the word? I mean, maybe he's afraid to say the word, but to simply, are we supposed to believe it's Hillary? That you know, Hillary's behind all this? I'm sure if you go to Fox News right now, that's exactly what they're pontificating on. Well, he didn't say Trump. He said he must be Hillary then. She's calling the shots. Lock her up, etc.
Not going to happen.
Why wouldn't he say the name? It's like Rumpelstiltskin or something. He's afraid to actually speak the word.
Well, and of all the norms and so on, the protocols and things to adhere to be so respectful of the office or to not impugn, as you hear sometimes on the floor of the Senate or the House, the office of the president and so on, all this reverence in this scenario seems
the guy is facing prison time. You really think he has reverence at this point?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's shown his reverence for his family, but I don't think and that he values that enough to try to avoid being away forever, or at least clinch something, you know, have some piece of that life that, you know, while he's facing this. But yeah, I don't know. It just seems too respectful, too careful. And at this point, yeah, it's all but saying the obvious, or the elephant in the room.
Well, yeah, and there is a big elephant in the room. In fact, we're the elephants in West Virginia right now. In fact, turn on C-SPAN tonight, folks. That's the best way to watch these things. And you'll see Trump's campaign speech or whatever in West Virginia. This is bound to be a classic because, you know, having two of his closest people found guilty on a total of 16 counts in a single day. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to that, because he is being drawn ever closer. And in this particular case, where Cohen has directly implicated him, one has to wonder, how long is this guy going to survive? How do you survive this? He basically aided in committing a felony and has been called out on it.
Where does this put us? I'm so curious with regard to his first year or two. Does any of that get invalidated? I wonder. I don't understand. Like, and then where also does it leave us insofar as his base and the sort of popular sentiment is, you know, is this when the checkpoints and militias come out? You know, I'm so curious, you know, what the reaction or sort of the attitudes coming away from this will be.
Well, I mean, if a corner a rabid dog, that'll give you kind of a clue as to what's ahead. Because I don't think he cares the damage that he causes. That's been pretty clear.
Right, but
he is increasingly being cornered.
But the authorities that he has invoked and all of this power he claims to have, I mean, how valid is that? If this then implicates him in some of the other cases and investigations, is he is he really justified in this office in so far as he purports to be?
No, he's. I mean,
we've kind of all known in the back of our heads, but
he's toast. He's history. It's just a question of how quickly the mechanisms will work.
Right.
But you know, what you have to remember is that once he's gone, he's going to be replaced by somebody who might not have the same charisma, and I hate to use that word, but it is true.
Yeah, don't forget about Pence kind of thing.
Yeah, you will get somebody like a Pence. You will get one of the enablers.
Or Ryan.
God, help us. Yeah, you'll get somebody like that, and that'll be the country for the next couple of years, probably.
How much is a pallet of...
But at least the danger will be somewhat under control. There is so much harm that has been caused already to the environment, to social programs, to people... financial, you know, all kinds of things that have yet to actually show the true extent of the damage that will take years, if not decades, to fix, and that is going to be I guess the project of this country for a while to come, and it's kind of like going through World War II, except there wasn't really a war, and the damage was kind of inflicted by a lunatic. And hopefully there won't be a real war, but there's going to be a period of reconstruction, and I just hope that we're up for that.
It could be reconstructed poorly too, and I think it's good. I mean, to say just for drill, any good that has come from this, let's keep those things, if anything, and then you know, be very focused on how we repair some of these relationships and goodwill in our country.
Well, the thing is, there is good that can come out of this, that I think has come out of this, and that's kind of showing the strength that many of us have, celebrating the beauty of all of us as individuals, seeing people who were previously voiceless standing up and challenging and being celebrated for that. I think what we're getting out of this era is just that recognition that, yeah, you know what, we are greater than this, we have power, we have voices, and we're going to use them, and we're going to stand up. But, you know, there's also a very negative side to this as well, because it's, you know, when people are pushed and they push back, as they should, sometimes they take on the same characteristics as the people that are pushing them.
Yes.
And they can be as bad, worse even, in some ways. History is filled with examples of this.
Yes, this is like this overcompensation that can happen when someone points something out and, okay, well, let's resolve it. And you sort of unilaterally go very, very far in the opposite direction. You need a balance. You need a pragmatic. You need a level-headed and a thought-through approach.
Right.
But it's certainly not something you cannot navigate, especially having navigated this so far.
The thing is, if our country survives this, and that is not yet decided, but if our country does survive this, it will have proven that the system does eventually work and it can withstand this kind of a threat. And if we don't all see this as a threat right now, I'm confident in the years ahead we will look back on it and realize, oh my God, what did we almost do? So if we're able to get through that, I think that's good for all of us, and it'll inspire us to do positive things in the future and prevent this from happening again. What I worry about, though, is that people in their quest to never do something like this again may see danger where there isn't danger, may see any expression of dissent in a conservative direction as something really evil or bad or something that has to be stamped out. You know, I think the saner voices will prevail, and I think we will always be open to listening to dialogue. But this is going to leave scars. The way that this whole campaign and occupation of the White House, as I like to call it, has transpired, is it's been a very ugly chapter in our nation's history, and it has not been done in a civil tone. Basically, the quest of the people in power now has been to destroy anything that has been accomplished in the past, whether it's health care or economic reforms or social reforms or international relations. You name it. You know, if Obama had repaved the driveway to the White House, you better believe Trump will be digging it up now and doing it right, you know, or not doing it at all. Something, just everything to undermine the other side. And you know, the Supreme Court is a perfect example of this. It used to be something that you could count on to be, you know, fairly, I don't want to say neutral, but fair, you know, open to all sides. And now it's become completely political. It's expected that Trump will simply nominate the most conservative person possible. And he's proven himself able to do that. In the past, presidents like Nixon or Ford or Carter would pick somebody that isn't necessarily aligned with their political views. That is how it's supposed to be done. Our country has moved to a place where you only serve one side. You do not serve the other side anymore. Now, I know when Obama was elected, I remember that night, election night, he was saying that he wanted to represent everybody. And I believe that was a very sincere gesture. I say that because he gave in quite a bit over the following months and years, too much, I think, because he overestimated the fairness of the other side. And obviously, they did not reciprocate, and they certainly are not reciprocating now. And that is something it's going to take time to fix. And it may not survive in the current state. In other words, we might have a whole different political landscape. And I think that's probably a healthy thing. I think we are well overdue for changes, for different parties, for perhaps a different kind of democratic system that is more open to different voices, more of a parliamentary type system, perhaps. It's a conversation that we need to continue having. And if anything good has come out of all this, we're having these conversations, and we need to continue doing that.
Yeah, how elections are run, how votes are counted and quantified, and how campaigns in general are financed. These things kind of matter in a much more tangible way. We can feel it, I think. Because you get situations like this if you're not careful.
Right. I'm just looking at other headlines, and you know, it just kind of underlines the things that we're talking about here. Apparently, the EPA is pushing through a new rule on coal. EPA plan would prolong life for power plants seen as climate change culprit. So, in other words, the things that Obama was seeking to cut down on, now the Trump administration is increasing. And another story below that, the cost of these new EPA coal rules up to 1,400 more deaths a year. This is the kind of thing that's happening. These are the kinds of things that it will take a long time to get past. And, you know, there are so many other examples of this.
It is the costs of these rules and these businesses and this administration and how it is killing people, you know, one way or another. And these things are hard to trace. That's why we have the institutions like the EPA to make these connections and do the research and understand the science and the impacts on human life. And
you have to respect the science to be able to do that. And they do not respect the science. They don't believe in science. And, you know, if you're going to ask yourself, how does a congressman know more about science than a scientist? Well, you're asking the right question. The answer is they don't. And they don't care. And the fact that they're willing to just ignore what scientists around the globe are saying about climate change tells you that they don't give a crap about that.
Yeah, 80 to 90% of the carbon emissions are these facilities. You know, understanding the carbon reactions and understanding the carbon economy, what was proposed under Obama as mm-hmm. far as carbon capping or cap and trade, these kinds of things, the stuff that was a part of the Paris goals and marks worldwide, the thing that we withdrew from so despicably,
right,
that impact is not necessarily in the interest of an entrenched power company. And it ought to be that, you know, yeah, regulators are not the entirety of this, but they are there to function in the interest of the people they represent, which is us. It's all those 1,400 people that are going to die because the interests of profit or these industry representatives are being prioritized instead of the solutions that were to, I think, create funding to transfer some of these facilities or retrofit them such that they're, you know, sending carbon into new fuel processes like algae for biofuels or you know, whatever other, maybe they co-generate with a wind or solar facility next to the facility, the scrubbing technologies that are used, et cetera. All of that is quite important to be a part of a comprehensive plan. But when you basically say, nah, the way they're doing it, it's fine. And, you know, that it's in the, you know, they're making money. We're going to prop this up and delay and continue to delay. You're not even recognizing the long-term effect and contribution to the global carbon situation.
Yeah.
And to say nothing of the local people, those 1,400 people you mentioned. So it's really stifling. So what could be additional jobs, new jobs, higher technology jobs. And, you know, people don't like the word sustainable. They don't like this kind of conversation. But it's kind of where the science is pointing us to. Yeah, these power technologies, these generation facilities, they worked for a long time.
What do you mean people don't like the word sustainable?
Well, I mean,
I like the word sustainable.
People, I think, can get numb. They can get, I think, a little blasé about it and about what it really means. They get kind of bored with it as a strategy, or they see it only as this like encumbrance or something. But really, it's about transitioning. Look, and moving systems,
it's simple,
in the right direction.
Instead of lecturing people, we look at examples. We look at Germany. We look at Iceland. We look at places that are using renewable energy and are sustainable, and it's working, and it's bringing the cost down, and it's saving the environment. We look at that as an example to follow. We put up more wind turbines. We use solar more. We stop penalizing people for that.
Right.
And we shut down the damn coal plants and employ those people in healthier, more prosperous lines of work.
Right. And the minute you use this word, I think people see it as like an immediate shutdown, and there's no transition. There's not. But you have to take the steps to move that way.
I mean, you know, you have to phrase
it's
it
not
right.
Immediate.
You can't be stupid like Hillary was and say, yeah, we're going to put you guys out of business. Yeah, you have to give a few seconds of thought to what you're going to say, especially if you're running for office and expect these people to vote for you. But, you know, that's just one thing. That's one example. I just pointed to one story about the coal plants. Multiply that by 50, and you have just what's happened in the last, you know, couple of months with all the damage that Trump has done. I'm looking at another story now. This is a tragic story of that jogger in Iowa whose body was found today. She was missing for a number of weeks. But the thing that worries me is all the headlines are saying man in country illegally charged with murder. So you better believe Trump is going to jump on that. You better believe Fox News is going to jump on that as further evidence of the fact that illegal aliens are killing us and raping us and causing all kinds of horrible things to happen in our country. Now, you know, obviously, this is a terrible story. This is something that nobody wanted to see happen. But to say that his immigration status has anything at all to do with what he did to this person is about as racist, nationalistic, and ignorant as I could possibly imagine. How, unless you really are pontificating that everybody south of the border is more violent and more prone to crime, how is this even relevant? What color was his hair? You know, these blonde-haired people, they tend to do more of these crimes. You know, how tall was he? What color? Well, we can't say that. We can't say what color he was. We can't say, yeah, another black person is responsible for this, because we realize that's racist and that's wrong. And we've gotten past that. But now, you know, we're kind of being pulled back by saying, oh, these people aren't supposed to be here anyway. We can all agree on that because, you know, he violated whatever rule he was supposed to be following being in this country. And he committed a crime. So therefore, everybody who violates that rule is more likely to commit this kind of a crime. It's a very slippery slope that we're being led onto. And you're going to see this exploited quite a bit in the next few days. Imagine if we were talking about religion And this has happened in the past. Imagine if, you know, instead of saying he was in the country illegally, you said he was, you know, one of these the Jewish culprits that, you know, causes all kinds of problems and must be dealt with. How is that relevant? It's not relevant. It's not relevant at all. But if you get people to believe that it's a threat, they will save that information. They will use that information. They will look for that information.
Yeah, I mean, it's condemning and making people the other, making them less than the the hegemonic sort of dominant popular force in society. But really, it's two different crimes, you know. And it's like, okay, yeah, there is a immigration status question, perhaps, but plenty of, as you said, plenty of citizens are capable of incredibly heinous things. And yeah, you're going, when you have other individuals in the country who just happen to not be a citizen, yeah, they're capable of committing crimes, but it's not necessarily correlated.
That they're also capable of doing great things. They could be saving your life. Now, how often do you see, you know, illegal aliens save life? You don't see it when it's something good, and you shouldn't see that kind of phrasing in any instance, but unfortunately, that is what we are being steered into, and I just hope that that doesn't become normal. It already has to a large extent.
Yeah.
The fact that this is the headline.
Yeah, it's all framing. I mean, I'm thinking of the heinous murder in Colorado. That guy was pretty white.
Wait, which heinous murder is this?
I don't know. Never mind. I don't want to get into it.
Well, now I'm going to wonder which heinous murder you're talking about. There's so many.
The guy that was, like, looking for his wife and his kids, and she was pregnant or something.
Oh, the guy. Yeah, the guy who was having an affair. Hold on. Okay.
Was it an affair? I don't know. They found her in a...
This is what I know. He claimed he was having an affair. Well, no, wait, what? Yeah, he admitted he was having an affair, but he claimed that his wife... He walked in on his wife strangling the two girls. I don't know how you do that, how you strangle two girls at once. And he wanted the DNA checked on the neck. It's really disgusting. The necks of the girls, which I guess he believes that her DNA will be found and that'll be proof that he killed her because she was killing. It's a really bizarre defense.
Yeah, but the girls were found in like an oil tank and he worked in like the oil services industry. So like, it's not like his wife.
Not
like,
to mention he didn't tell anybody about it for a bunch of days.
Wife was like, you know, familiar with where he worked. I don't know. It just seems a little cuckoo. Things got a little out of hand. I guess Disneyland wasn't so happy.
Lawyers have a hard job. There's some guy sitting with him saying, okay, so you sure you want to go with this line of defense that, yeah, that she was strangling and you killed her then, and then you were so distraught that you didn't say anything, and in your sleep you dumped them into the oil.
But you just want to see them again.
Yeah. So, okay, but that person was not an illegal immigrant, and that was not mentioned in the headline, was it?
No.
Citizen.
No.
Citizen accused. Yeah, why don't we just do that now? Why don't we just, everything that happens, we just say citizen or illegal immigrant, because apparently that is so relevant now that it has to always be part of the headline.
But that's framing and part of what we were saying earlier about critical thinking and how it's important when you're, you know, informing yourself to be critical and consider how it is framed or what language is used.
You know, it doesn't mean that you're supporting illegal immigration when you say this isn't relevant. You know, I don't support people who don't tip enough. I don't. I think that's really nasty and bad.
That's why we get into arguments.
That's
so
why
much.
We get into very big arguments about this. Sometimes those waitresses, that's all they have. You know, and it's the only job. And well, I can't get into it again now. We don't have enough time.
No, you and I
can
go.
But the point is that, you know, it's not relevant. The fact that they violated a particular code by being here when they were supposed to be somewhere else. Okay, you know, there are so many codes we can say this person did not register with the post office when he moved from Idaho to Illinois. Okay, how is that relevant? It's not. But it can be if you decide to make it relevant by saying this person should have been there and he was here. You know, and if he wasn't here, he wouldn't have done what he did while he was here. Okay, yeah, that's probably true. But it doesn't make the act of how he got there somehow the genesis for the evil. And that is what we are doing by accepting this dialogue.
Well, to say nothing of safety and violence, I mean, in a lot of cases, the opportunity and the danger in Mexico, at the border, just across the border, and also in Central and South America, there are circumstances that drive people, economic but also social, and as I said, safety, which is a factor. Whether people come in legally or not, I mean, they may be justified. Maybe they're not going about it the right way, but they may have legitimate reasons to seek a better life here. And as a nation, especially with our history and our own, you know, deservedness as far as being here, we should be welcoming, because, you know, we weren't exactly invited ourselves.
You also have to ask yourself, why are things so desperate and bad in other parts of the world that people are trying, you know, to get here and working so incredibly hard, harder than any of us, and going through literal minefields or figurative minefields to get here. Why is that? Why is there such a gap between quality of life in one part of the world and another? It's not something that we have no effect on. We certainly do have an effect on this. The gap between rich and poor has never been greater, and the conditions in one part of the world as opposed to another, those are also related. So, you know, we have an obligation to help those who are less fortunate, whether they're in our own country or in other lands that are affected by what we do, what our corporations do, what our governments do. And we need to be more socially responsible. We certainly can't afford to be, and these are human beings. And if we were in their position, we would be doing the exact same thing. Just ask yourself that. What is it that had you born in this particular country? Pure luck. You could easily have been born someplace else. And what would you want if you were born someplace else and were in a dire situation? You would want to get someplace better for you, for your family. So let's stop treating these people as if they are criminals or evil. In many cases, they are heroes, and they deserve to be treated with respect and given a chance. And I know that's a radical thought, but that's the dialogue I'd like to be having in the years ahead, in the reconstruction, the post-Trump reconstruction. That's what they're going to call it, you know.
Yeah, I think that the trade stuff, you can see that like exemplifies the interrelatedness and the our dependency on other nations, and of course, like the impact that our transactions and stuff. And a lot of that's hidden, especially in the corporate side. Like, you know, companies are not that transparent about how many different places their parts come from, who assembles things, that kind of stuff. It's come out, and it's been a talking point and a big discussion in the last, I think, 5 and 10 years. But people are, I think, more aware of the materials and the labor that is involved and want to participate in things that are good and entities that are good. And there's a lot more cool factor, I think, around stuff that is considerate. And it isn't just dependent on, like, free trade zones. That's, you know, free trade zones are not fair trade. So, I mean, those distinctions, I think, are a lot clearer to consumers now. And there's a value in something that is supportive of communities around the world and recognizes the sort of interrelatedness and interdependent nature that our country you know, has benefited from so, so very much. And I think it will be the reconstruction, the Trump reconstruction era to a large degree, because there are a lot of things to be desired about this current climate. And I think we'll persevere, and we're going to have to be vigilant about who, whatever side you're on, like who you're electing and how you're implementing things, because a lot of this was very crass and you know, unfeeling, and really does not reflect the overall sentiment of our nation.
It's vital that people turn out and vote this November. Vote.org has all kinds of information on how to do that in your state, how to register if you're not already registered. It's quick, it's easy. And my advice is to simply, if you want to change, don't support anybody who is enabling, who is allowing these kinds of things to happen, who doesn't have the guts to speak up. And, you know, if we actually are able to steer the ship in a different direction, it's not going to happen overnight. It's a lot that has to be cleaned up and fixed, but a lot will be saved from the moment victory is evident. And I think we'll be better for it in the long term. It's going to take patience, but nothing happens if we don't speak up. Nothing happens if we keep quiet. And I think that's what so many people who are tired of the dialogue have done. They clam up. I've heard this from so many people. What, they don't want to talk about politics with their relatives, and you know who does? I don't know if anything is gained from that, but you certainly shouldn't keep your opinions to yourself and just let others go on and on about about their particular views. Think of it this way. How many times do we see Trump things on cars, Trump stickers and various other signs that people are, you know, are favoring that particular point of view? Quite a bit, right?
A fair amount, yeah. Yeah,
but I know almost everybody I know doesn't want to put something anti-Trump on their car because they're afraid it'll be vandalized. They're afraid they'll be targeted. And we do the same thing on social media. People don't talk on Facebook about their political views because they don't want to attract the trolls. They don't want to get drawn into this particular, horrible dialogue that just doesn't seem to end and doesn't get anywhere. And as a result, we wind up accepting things. And, you know, at the very least, don't let that extend to your voting power, because you do have the power to make a change. And that is just so vital, so important. I'd like to read a quote. This actually is a transcript from Trump's remarks at a New York fundraiser. He was in the Hamptons last week. Do you know that? He was right here on Long Island again.
Yay.
he was at a fundraiser, of course, a fundraiser talking about coal and also talking about windmills, but not in a good way. And by the way, let me give out the phone number, because we'd like to hear from people, but I know people are tired of talking about this. I don't blame you. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. I think last week we might have had a wrong button push, so the people calling might not have been able to hear us, but I'm pretty sure we have that fixed now.
Just think of how, like, disgraceful this family is. Like, this whole dynasty. Like, we talked about Pence and Ryan, and yeah, there's the political creatures and, mm-hmm. and urchins and things that are going to surface in the changing of the guard, so to speak. But just this family in general, I think we shouldn't lose... lose critiques of wealth and people that behave this way. This has been magnified. This is a glaring, exaggerated case. I don't think we should become desensitized to corruption and malfeasance, even small examples, because not everything is like this family, this disgraceful, disgusting family. And, you know, I think, you know, we're going to see more examples of this that are smaller. They're not on the same scale, but where are they going to go? I mean, their entire disgusting, tacky lives are now culminating in this. What is the rebranding of the Trump dynasty after this? Where do they go?
Just reality TV. Go back to that. Leave us alone. Anyway, here's the quote from the fundraiser last week. And keep in mind, President of the United States, 2018. You remember Hillary with the coal, right? Sitting with the miners at the table. Remember? That wasn't so good for her. So the people of West Virginia and all over, you look at Wyoming, you look at so many different places where they just, Pennsylvania, where they loved what we did and it's clean coal and we have the most modern procedures. But it's a tremendous form of energy in the sense that in a military way, think of it, coal is indestructible. Okay, let's take a little rest there. I'm only halfway through, but a lot of that didn't make any sense.
There's a little bit of truth to the military aspect, because the Fisher-Tropsch method...
No, don't try to make it make sense. It doesn't make sense.
The military did choose a gasification technology or a liquefaction from, I think... petroleum gas, not coal. I don't know if it's coal gas.
Who cares? How's this relevant?
But it's not the only way to get energy. But he's trying to conflate that as a strategic reserve of some sort, when it's not. It takes all kinds of energy to process, even if that was the most viable method.
Okay, halftime is over. Back to the speech. Yeah, you can blow up a pipeline. You can blow up the windmills. You know, the windmills. Boom, boom, boom. Mimicking the windmill sound. I don't know how to do that. Bing. I'm just reading the quote here. Mimes a shooting large gun. That's the end of that one. If the birds don't kill it first. the birds could kill it first. They kill so many birds. Okay, which is it? Are the birds killing it, or is it killing birds? I don't even know. Yeah, you look underneath some of these windmills, it's like a killing field, the birds.
No.
But, you know, that's what they were going to. They were going to windmills. And, you know, don't worry about when the wind doesn't blow. I said, what happens when the wind doesn't blow? Well, then we have a problem. Okay, good. They were putting them in areas where they didn't have much wind, too. And it's a subsidiary. You need subsidy for windmills. You need subsidy. Who wants to have energy where you need subsidy? So the coal is doing great. This is real. This is how this guy talks, and these are the things that he's saying. And he doesn't understand anything from windmills to coal to energy to economics. It all is just this crazy muddled mess.
The bird killing thing is not the birds actually killing it, but protection of birds. It's, again, this is like the EPA is threatening.
He doesn't care about any birds anywhere. I can guarantee you that.
And he's feigning interest.
Sometimes birds fly into windmills. That is a fact. Yes, that does happen. He doesn't care about that. Believe me.
Well, if it was an animal or species shutting down a coal mine, I'm sure he wouldn't care at all.
Yeah, whatever is killed by a coal mine is dwarfs this by far.
Whatever. Tailings and all that stuff kills people, not birds. I mean, it's insanity.
And there is always wind in the ocean, certain heights. If there is no wind, and I think he's asking a question, if all the wind stopped, yeah, there would be a problem then, but that never happens.
Well, and it's about design. I mean, if the wind powers a pump that pumps water into a reservoir, and then you can, like, unleash that at times when there isn't wind, you know, or if you're using a combination of wind and solar to store in some sort of fuel cell, like, power bank, and I mean, there's a lot of energy storage technologies and emerging technology that could be part of a larger design. So this oversimplification of it just feeds stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
It's just cheapness and stupidity and greed. It's basically all it fills.
That's where you should leave the conclusion. Rather than try and make sense of anything he is saying or say, yeah, okay, this actually has some relevance, he doesn't understand the relevance, and I don't think we should be helping him make points where he clearly has no comprehension of the points that he even has a dim understanding of. This is harmful. This is something that hurts the environment, that does not get us forward in any way, and we need to just expose it for what it is.
I would say, like, just in regards of, like, military and security in general, like, we produce a lot more energy domestically, and that is good for domestic security and the military. And as far – and, like, that comment about – I mean, he's kind of talking about that as far as strategic energy reserves, but also as, like, you know, a fuel to literally power the military, who consumes an enormous amount of jet fuel and other fossil fuels. In fact, that's a huge reason why they're interested in protecting the petroleum industry, because they rely on those refining, those private commercial refining capacities. But I will say that the military can make jet fuel out of a lot of different things. And it is not that coal needs to be the thing. They have chosen it in the past as a part of a larger strategic profile. And there are processes to convert gas and liquefaction technologies that are established. But there are many, many, many other ways. And really, it's the diversity. You know, having just one of these is a bad idea. Yeah, anybody would tell you that.
That is basically where...
So it's not the answer. And conflating it with the military and security, yeah, one resource, but you is an... a contributing factor, but not an entire solution.
It's, you know, I'm just impatient having this conversation because it's been established.
Yeah, it's stupid.
It's like people, misguided people saying, yeah, Holocaust deniers are evil, but we should have the conversation. No, we shouldn't have the conversation. This has been settled. We have to stop giving airtime to people who keep making the same points that have been disproven over and over and over again. And I don't care if it's the president. I don't care who it is. We cannot keep wasting time on this, because every moment you spend, you know, pontificating on their points or lack of clarity is time you're not spending moving forward and coming up with better ideas and giving support to the ideas that have already come up that are good. there are so many of those, so many amazing things that are happening in the world of science, in the world of technology, that we should be pursuing, that we are not, because we are just mired in all this nonsense.
Well, and remember, there's also policy actions. Like this administration, the way research funding and stuff is done for next generation fuel or other forms of technology, like that stuff is very much dictated by administrations like this. So, yeah, they can talk a lot of crap and not make any sense and all of that. But remember that at the same time, you know, they're appointees and individuals that have a hand in some of this, policymakers, politicians, those that are representing some of these other entrenched or older industries, they influence how these technologies, what students at various research universities, what they test, what they what studies they do. If they're primarily funded by coal interests or something,
right.
That's the kind of research you're going to get. How to make a coal pile bigger.
And that should not be happening. That's not how it should be working. That's what needs to be fixed.
Yeah, and I mean, these institutions have pretty much divested. A lot of them have divested from these organizations, but that doesn't necessarily mean the research isn't going to be done. But again, you have to fund these smaller startups, these companies. And the last thing I'll say is the subsidizing. You know, our airline industry is heavily subsidized. The oil, the gasoline and petroleum industry is heavily subsidized. We don't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, we can talk about renewable fuel subsidies and all of these things to more or less help or prop up a wind farm or something that has all of these hurdles from an industry perspective. In other words, they didn't have an industry before they existed. You have to create an incubator for things to emerge and then create a new market. And the administration and these companies who are entrenched do not have a motivating interest to encourage new markets, especially where they will be in direct competition or otherwise outmoded. So that is an important consideration. And, there has to be support for these things. They don't just exist in parallel with while this stupidity is being talked about.
So in the interest of fair time, I don't want to dispatch Trump for the entire hour, just maybe 50 minutes of it. Cuomo said something interesting last week. He made that comment in a speech. He out Cynthia Nixon by basically saying America was never that great in response to all the Make America Great Again hats, I guess, and people. And he has been lambasted for this, for saying America was never that great. And you're seeing mostly silence from the left as usual, because they don't ever speak up when someone they might slightly disagree with says something that's right. Because wow, you know, you're labeling yourself in a particular way. But I think he deserves commendation for actually saying something gutsy like that. Of course, he's backtracked himself now, because you kind of have to do that as a politician. But ask yourself this question, you know, America was never that great. And all the people that are reacting to that saying, of course, America. Okay, when people was America great? Give me a year. Give me a date. Give me some time where America was great, where there wasn't slavery, where there wasn't a massacre of the native population, where there wasn't inequality or poverty or just overall lack of caring about people and, ahead of profits and things like that. When was that? And also, here's a second point here. Do you realize everybody who's wearing a Make America Great Again hat is saying that America is not great? Because think of the phrase, make America great again. All right, that it's not great now, so you have to make it great as it once was. So they are basically saying America is not great now. And many of them were quite open in saying that, because, well, a black guy was running the country, and that was no good. So, yeah, America sucked then. And when was it great? So that's the question I asked everybody who either wears those hats or is criticizing Cuomo for saying America was never that great. Now, there are elements of greatness. Yes, absolutely. and most of them come from the individual people. But I don't think you can point to a period of time. You can't point to the 1800s, certainly. You can't point to the early part of the 20th century, and the middle part of the century kind of was terrible. And the 60s, what, you had the Vietnam War and the war again. No, it's all kinds of things that this country was always had major problems. Now, I'm not pointing to any other country and saying that country was great, not even Great Britain, who had to put it into their name. But the fact that that you realize that your country has failings and that it needs work, I think that is something that deserves commendation, because how many people actually admit that? How many people actually admit their own flaws and can say that, we need improvement? So I'd like to see people realize that and say, yeah, you're right. Let's work together to make this maybe one day a great place.
Yeah, it's certainly capable. I think it's always been through the imperfection and recognition that is an evolving and work in progress. And we have to appreciate that that's an active process. We have to contribute to it.
Well, you can write to us, since people don't want to call us. Write to us at otw@2600.com. This is for the Trump administration.
Guys like me, we take it all away, away from kind people like you.
We'll see you next week. Remember, they're guilty. Very guilty.
Hey kids, Finn with you. Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook until the 9 p.m. hour. I'm going to nod a little bit to Aretha, nod a little bit to Joe Strummer, whose birthday it is today. And hey, look, another guilty witch, I'll tell you. And a little while, Robert Paas of the Band of Susans. Very exciting. Stay tuned. Yeah, so pretty interesting day today. Two more down for those of you who are keeping score, and it's a quite the amazing thing. I think we're going to hear a little something that we played last week from Aretha Franklin, but I loved it so much, I'm going to love it again right here, WUSB Stony Brook. Aretha playing a little something for the kids, right here.
Tell me how can you get through when you can't remember who you're talking to? Concentration is just slipping away, because your baby is so far away. And there's a rose in the mystic world, and the eagle flies with the dove. And if you can do, and the rose
Too strong, I'm headed to you. Change, change, change.